Change your Yahoo password and your security questions right now. Donald Trump does not want us to give away the internet, a novelty VR toy that costs $50, and a Lego drone that might cost too much, too. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1604, recorded Thursday, September 22nd, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT.
And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more.
And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about the technology news that matters. We are the Professor and Marianne of Tech News.
I like that you pointed to me when you said Marianne. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
I resemble that name, I think.
Yes. Shall we get to the news?
Yes.
Yahoo confirmed a data breach today that happened back in 2014 and could affect the acquisition of the company by Verizon. A state-sponsored actor supposedly accessed 500 million accounts, which means this could be the largest hack of all time. Now, if your personal information has been compromised, you should have received an email with instructions on what to do, which includes, of course, changing your password and your security questions and reviewing your accounts for all that suspicious activity. So, you know, MySpace was only 427 million, so this is beating it. A world record.
Not the kind of world record you want to break, though.
No, especially when your company is in the middle of a sale, a company that wasn't that lucrative a purchase in the first place. So, yeah, it's going to spur a government investigation because it's so big. Like, they think it's a state-sponsored actor. Last month, a hacker was claiming to have all these Yahoo credentials for sale, but now it turns out that hacker was being honest about that.
Okay, so does Yahoo know about this for 2 years and doesn't tell anybody for obvious reasons? Is that kind of what we think is going on here? Because that's, you know, they're putting their business before their customers, or their users, and that's pretty slimy.
Well, that's the thing. It's one of those situations, what did they know and when did they know it?
Exactly.
Like, I don't think we know that they knew for 2 years. And this happens all the time. Like, the company knows, and then they tell us a lot long time after they know.
Right. So the information that we're talking here, names, emails, phone numbers, birthdays, hashed passwords, they were hashed with bcrypt, encrypted and unencrypted security questions and answers. So that, you know, I mean, people, I'm sure a lot of people just use the standard same ones over and over again. So And then that does not include credit card bank accounts. That was all kept on a different system. It also doesn't include unprotected passwords. But when you're talking about 5 million plus accounts. 500 million. Yeah, 5 million would be a walk in the park compared to this. And especially when it's something like Yahoo credentials, which Yahoo ID, you know, it's connected to all these other accounts that you might have linked to it. So this, the potential for this, kind of the widespread potential, not just in Yahoo. Like, I've seen a lot of comments on Twitter, like, even if you haven't used Yahoo in a few years, you should go in and change your password. That's the beginning. I feel like that's only the beginning. And if you don't use Yahoo, maybe that's the least of your worries. What is it connected to? When you were using Yahoo 10 years ago, were you using it with the practice of not sharing your passwords? I'm sure a lot of people didn't know that lesson then. Mm-hmm. And so the same password is used in other places. So what accounts is that shared with? You got to go in there and you got to make all these changes. I don't know. It's a big deal.
So you're saying that Taylor Swift fan Tumblr that you had 10 years ago...
That
you're nervous about someone hacking into that. You didn't even think about
know
it.
That you knew about that site. But yes, that's exactly what I'm thinking about.
Okay.
Yahoo does have kind of a two-factor thing that they offer, Yahoo account key. So they recommend doing that for their site anyways. And from what I understand, sources are telling Recode that the former Yahoo security chief actually attempted to get Yahoo to act quickly on this when he was still there. So they knew about it early enough for him to have still been there. He now works at Facebook. I don't know when he transitioned over to Facebook, but there was advanced knowledge. And we also know that Yahoo, you know, is undergoing this big sale that they've been planning for quite a while now. So I don't know. Those things in combination don't sound very good to me.
Mm-hmm. And I think that the sale will probably still go through, but it might not be, you know, their value might go down.
Possibly so. Yeah, because that's a large liability to take on, because then Verizon's going to have to go in there and see what their security systems are, and that's not going to be fun. LinkedIn is putting its acquisition of Lynda from a year and a half ago to new use with its newly launched site called LinkedIn Learning. With 9,000 courses on offer, LinkedIn is presenting a number of subjects, including programming, writing, accounting, business management, and a bunch of other courses that you can take. Much of the content is pulled in from Lynda. Now, full disclosure, Lynda as well as LinkedIn are sponsors on this network. So just want to tell you that up front. But this news broke earlier this morning is available to LinkedIn premium subscribers, and they're actually going to get 25 new courses every week. And then there's going to be an enterprise tier somewhere down the line to where like big corporations, big companies can buy into it and offer, like direct access to their employees of all of this content.
Yeah, it seems like we're seeing a lot of, you know, Microsoft's influence here. You know, they, of course, bought LinkedIn. And so this seems to be sort of like they're creating a social network. So it's not just the Lynda content that's coming in. There's also going to be bots, you know, that mm-hmm. tell you what you want to learn. There's going to be like a redesigned messaging that will look more like Facebook Messenger.
Right.
I think it's just like people who really like the idea of social networking, but want it surrounded more around their job or their career, or, you know, for people that are kind of always looking for jobs, I think this is great. You know, people who are freelancers or, you know, that sort of thing where it's like you're always looking for leads and that kind of thing, that would make more sense to have your social network built around a place like LinkedIn.
I mean, I've kind of, for whatever reason, I've always kind of thought of LinkedIn as a social network, but a social network tied to business. And what this really seems to be to me is like an expansion of like the educational aspect of LinkedIn. So LinkedIn has historically been this great place to like connect with people that you work with or people that you used to work with or connect with people that you want to work with through the people that you work with or used to work with or whatever. But now you have the ability to also kind of like improve your skill set to like market yourself in all of those directions or become better at what you do so that you can use LinkedIn as a tool to find a better job, let's say, or whatever. So I think the tie-in makes perfect sense.
Well, I've always thought of LinkedIn as a social network, but a horrible one with some really features that are just annoying. You know,
right.
Your contact wants to connect with you on LinkedIn. Like
right.
those spammy emails, the messaging that you can't take from LinkedIn to anywhere else. Like you can't move those around. It's just, you know, the fact that like anytime you look at someone's profile, they know that you look at that.
Yeah,
you know?
At certain tiers they
just
do.
Some
yeah.
weirdo, I mean, any tier. Like I think I'm just a regular LinkedIn, but when I go there, it just says like, here are the people that looked at your profile.
It gives you a few of those. I think yeah. you can get even more insight yeah. if you're like a premium member.
Right.
You can see all the people that look at you. So you can be like, oh, someone from Microsoft's looking at me. Maybe I need to get in touch with this person from Microsoft and see if they have a job for me or whatever. You know?
Yeah. That so, sort of yeah. thing. Spammy, creepy, just a bad social network. So I am hoping that like with the Microsoft influence, they will be able to become a better social network. Just not, you know, just know what features are idiotic and what are useful.
Yeah. It seems like LinkedIn has historically needed refinement.
Like, that's a nicer way, more refined.
I mean, because the information and the knowledge and the connectivity, you know, to people, it's super valuable. Like it's funny because LinkedIn, it's, you know, when you get in conversations with people about LinkedIn, everybody has a LinkedIn account, but not everybody is using it very regularly. And maybe that's because they're looking for a job or they're not looking for a job. So this is, and this kind of ties into that, right? What are more ways that we can make, that they can make LinkedIn valuable to people who maybe aren't looking for a job? Expanded education capabilities is one way to do it. And then all of the refinements that they're doing to the actual social network are probably very welcome, because even when you go there, sometimes the design of the site and everything is just kind of feels a little outdated.
Yeah. I mean, the app is better designed, and I think some of those features they're going to take to on the web, put those on the web. So, well, thank you to Rick for writing in about this next developing story. We love your story suggestions. Keep them coming to TNT at twit.tv. Lenovo users on Reddit have been reporting that the company is stopping users from running Linux on their machines. Now, someone purporting to be a Lenovo product expert on the Best Buy Help site said Microsoft insisted Lenovo not support Linux on Signature Edition PCs. Now, those are the PCs that come with no bloatware. That's what they call Signature Edition. Lenovo then responded with an official statement saying that the company does not intentionally block customers using other operating systems on its devices and is fully committed to providing Linux certifications and installation guidance on a wide range of products. But unfortunately, the computers that the Reddit users were trying to use are not on that Linux-supported list. So put your pitchforks away, people. Stop blaming Microsoft for this. And stop believing people on the internet who say they are product experts.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you contact Best Buy and speak to a product expert, like I just kind of assume that that's another name for customer service representative. And they may or may not know exactly the answer. Like, I know I'm guessing you've been in this situation, but I've certainly been there, where you go someplace and there's someone behind the counter and you ask them a question and you know full well that the answer they gave you was not an answer out of knowing the answer. It was an answer out of just like getting you to shut up and move along,
right,
or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, this could possibly be one of those scenarios.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think the problem really was that the Intel soft RAID present on these machines is not compatible with Linux. And I understand about like 75% of what that means. It's a storage driver compatibility problem.
Yeah,
and
when it boils
down
to it.
About 90% of what that means. So
I think that's the moral of the story, is that sometimes those drivers are not compatible, and in this case, they are not. I'm guessing that they will be eventually, because, I mean, why would you not eventually release drivers that would allow for people to do with these computers what both Microsoft and Lenovo say you should be able to do with them? Mm-hmm. It's just you can't yet.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Apple wasted no time getting its first beta of iOS 10.1 out the door, and it features an upgrade to the camera functionality that was shown off at the announcement, called Portrait Mode for iPhone 7 Plus. This utilizes the dual camera setup on the back to allow for bokeh effects that simulate shallow depth of field effects that can be executed on larger format DSLR cameras. And so there's a video on the article that we have here from Mac Rumors where they're kind of showing it off. One thing I really like about this implementation is, because I've definitely seen the dual camera bokeh effect thing on a decent number of Android phones at this point, to mixed results. But what I like about what we're seeing here is it's not an after the fact effect processing. It's all kind of done in real time. So when you enter into the mode, the image on your screen gets a little bit larger because it switches to that lens in particular, and then it's using the other lens for kind of the depth information, and you were able to preview it in real time as you're taking the picture and kind of see what the effect is. And that's a really great way to do it.
Yeah, Leo calls this foca. He says it's not real bokeh.
Oh, foca.
Yes. So I took a picture with my iPhone 6S a couple weeks ago, and I just, you know, you tap on the screen, it was like, you know, I tapped on the screen and the object that was in the foreground, and it looked just like that. I posted on Twitter. I was like, what's the difference here? And many people, including Alex Lindsay, who, you know, is a photographer, said this, you can take it from further away. Like,
right,
the different, like I was very close to an object and, you know, tapped on it, and then it made that cool effect on its own, essentially. But yeah, that's basically, you can be further away and it'll do it. Mike Hurley from Relay FM, he's been trying this out too and has some really cool photos that he's taken. He also is not a photographer, but he's coming to fill in for Leo on iOS today on Monday. And so we'll talk a little bit more about how that works, because sadly, I do not have my iPhone yet.
One thing that I notice on these in all implementations, and including these, because I was getting some of these photos and really kind of zooming in on them, is that you get... where you see it fall apart, and it's only if you're really scrutinizing it, usually, unless it's done really badly, is on the edges of the foreground versus the background image. When you really kind of get in there, and this is kind of like a side-by-side with an actual DSLR, so you can kind of see the edges, right? Like, they kind of get a little blurry around the edges, and that's kind of like that's the switchover point from the in-focus foreground to the out-of-focus background, and there's like a little transition that happens there. Whereas on a true DSLR like this, you can actually see it. It's super sharp around those edges. So you definitely get that even with this implementation. But I mean, the effect is still well done, I think. I think it's executed well on the iPhone.
And it's harder to put that DSLR in your pocket.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. This gives you that option at least while you're at the club. Or
right.
Wherever you happen
to be. Up at the club.
You're not going to take a DSLR to the club, are you? Are you that kind of clubber? I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm sure there are some clubbers that take their DSLR to the club.
I love your club hands. You're like, you know, the club.
Club. Oh.
All right. Let's talk about Minecraft. A full version of the Minecraft Education Edition will launch November 1st. It will cost $5 a year per student. It'll include a companion app that helps teachers build lesson plans on a wide range of subjects, from urban planning to ancient history. So this is pretty exciting. This is part of Minecraft .edu. They bought this website, Microsoft did last year, I think, and now it's going to come out. It's not going to be exactly like the Minecraft that you have at home or that I have at home.
I don't have it at home yet.
So you won't be blowing up cows or anything in the classroom setting yet. This is exciting.
We'll be blowing up cows someday in the classroom setting, but not now. Yeah, I guess classroom mode lets teachers, it's basically like God mode for teachers. So it lets them kind of take control of all the variables inside the world. They can present items to students, transport students to different sections. They kind of have control over the entire experience in a teachery sort of way. They also say that features will actually match the main release in ways that items and skins and all that kind of stuff will actually translate from one to the other. But I think what you're probably going to get in the classroom, I'm guessing there's going to be some limitations so that students just don't, you know, go wild in the Minecraft world.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know if it'll just be creative mode or, you know, or not. But, there's also a camera included in this so that you can track the work. So, like, it's something that, you know, it's not, it just doesn't disappear.
Right.
So you can take screenshots of the work that you've done or, you know, probably more than just a screenshot. It's a feature in the Education Edition.
Cool. All right. Coming up, what else? More news. We've got a few more news stories to talk about. But before that, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They are the sponsor of this episode. Rocket Mortgage is all about, well, giving you the mortgage, of course, but also making it easy to get there. Because if you've ever done it before, you know it's not always that easy to get there. Rocket Mortgage makes it easy. Brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It's fast, powerful, and completely online. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. So if you hate searching through all of your old files, stacks of files and paperwork and all that kind of stuff, you won't have to in this regard. With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button. It's going to help you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. And even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or your tablet. It's a quick online process. You can even manage it from the convenience of your couch or the kitchen table, wherever you happen to be. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or to buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. All right, so October 1st is right around the corner, and that is the day that the U.S. is set to hand over its control of the domain name system, DNS system, to ICANN, an international nonprofit, after the agreement was approved in August by the National Telecommunications and Information Administration in the U.S. But this is an election season, and the build-up to the election, the handing over of this control is now suddenly in campaign crosshairs. Presidential candidate Donald Trump is siding with an earlier call by Senator Ted Cruz to jump in and stop the transition, basically. Both candidates say that they feel that by relinquishing the U.S.'s long-standing control over the DNS, there's a threat of that control landing in the wrong hands, let's say in the hands of China or in the hands of Russia are two examples that they gave. The transition initially kicked off because there were foreign objections to the fact that, you know, the control over the DNS has been in U.S. hands for so long. The U.S. kind of saw its involvement as being very kind of clerical, not really overseeing the internet, but just kind of doing the back end work. And so it seemed to make sense to hand it over to ICANN. But now that seems to be going in the opposite direction, at least in some people's minds.
I don't have a lot to say about this, except for I don't think that Donald Trump really understands how the internet works.
Yeah.
And I don't think he understands how a lot of things work. You know, people being nice to people, being kind, that sort of thing. But yeah, maybe I should stop talking.
How about we let Tim Berners-Lee, who's the creator of the World Wide Web, talk for you. Also, the MIT professor, Daniel Weitzner. They say no such control is even possible with ICANN in control. They say ICANN supervises domain names on the internet. The actual flow of traffic, which is what they're concerned with, like taking over the flow of traffic and having control over that. They say the actual flow of traffic and therefore speech is up to individual network and platform operators. So both Trump and Cruz have come out, you know, worried that, you know, like free speech is going to be clamped down as a result of this transfer. The creator of the World Wide Web says that's not true. I tend to side with the person who created the technology, but that's just me. Cruz is attempting to push through a block for this that's attached to, I guess, an essential short-term spending bill, as is the case in government, which kind of blows my mind. But Congress ultimately would have to step in to block this, and otherwise it's going to be a done deal as of October 1st. So I guess we will wait and see, and we'll talk about it when it goes through, if it goes through.
Yeah, let's wait and see.
All right.
Moving on, if you're using a dating app, you'll want to use your most flattering photo for your profile. Maybe you'll do some photoshopping first. Perhaps you'll even take the photo at someone else's house because they have nicer furniture than you do. You might even take the photo with someone else's cute dog. I hear there's a lot of pressure on the dating sites to have cute dogs. That is apparently really? True. So as long as you're going that far, why not use someone else's profile entirely? So someone else's picture. Just use someone else's picture. Why not? Well, here's why not. If you're using the dating site Bumble and someone reports you, you're going to have to prove that you are you. TechCrunch says that any account holders who have been reported as impersonators will now have to take a selfie to verify their accounts. Then a real person, not facial recognition software, will check the photo against your profile pic. This is in response to a rising in catfishing scams, where cyber criminals don't ever intend to meet anyone. They're just using the site to try to scam people. So what they do is, you know, they say, okay, well, you've been, you know, someone says you're impersonating them. So they send you a bunch of different pictures. If you're watching this, there's a woman like putting a little, you know, okay sign over her eye. And then you have to imitate that pose. So you can't just like upload another picture of someone else, you know, another picture that's not you. So you have to imitate that pose right then, and then someone will look at it. So yeah, they say that they will use people and that they have enough people to do this and check them each individually.
Yeah, and that the turnaround they think is not going to be that much. Maybe it might take 2, 5, 10 minutes to verify or whatever, but ultimately, you know, they think that they can handle this. I think this is a really great approach. I mean, if you've got 100 different kind of poses, let's say, it's going to be impossible pretty much for that person to find that pose, unless that person has access to the other that person and take a picture of that person doing the pose and then upload that photo. I guess they could get away with it then, but
right.
I don't think that other person is going to enjoy that or really like that.
Yeah,
agree with it at all.
I don't think it's really just the, what was that? It was a Steve Martin movie. It was called Roxanne, but I can't remember what it was actually based on. Where, you know, they have the person speaking. You know, he couldn't speak, so he had someone writing all of his lines for him. Because
Ghostwriter.
No, he could speak, but he was ugly. Oh. And so, what am I thinking of? And then they had someone else.
Shakespeare?
Shakespeare.
Yeah, Burke is nodding Shakespeare.
It was based on Shakespeare.
Cyrano de Bergerac.
There we go.
De Bergerac. Thank you. Thank you very much. So, you know, I don't think it's that situation where, you know, you have someone like, just use my picture and I will. There we go.
Roxanne, you don't have to put on the red line. Oh, different Roxanne. Sorry.
Yeah, different Roxanne. Yeah, okay. But I don't think it was that. It wasn't some person who found themselves unattractive, but, you know, was very eloquent and wanted
to say the
words. They're just
trying to be somebody else.
I think it's, you know, people who want to scam people. They have no intention of dating this person. They want to steal their money or, you know, get them to give them money or something like that. And, you know, on Twit, Larry Magid was on Twit over the weekend, and he does Save Kids, but he's also working on guides for elders, for older people. And he says, like, they produced an online dating guide. There's a lot of senior citizens who are on the market dating now, and they go to these sites and they get scammed there because, you know, someone says, you know, they pretend to be someone that they're not, an older person, and then they try to steal their money. Right. So I think that's what this is about. And I'm impressed because Bumble is not a huge site. I mean, I think it was started by one of the women who was involved in starting Tinder, but it's a women-led dating site, and, you know, women have a lot of control in it. Like, I don't know exactly how it works, but I think they're the ones that, you know, they can only swipe one way. The man doesn't have a choice in it in some way. But I think this is impressive because, like, if you ever go to Twitter and someone's impersonating you on Twitter, it is impossible to get them off, you know? And so, like, this seems, I don't know why Twitter doesn't use some form of this.
Yeah. I think it's a really great method. I think it'll be super effective. The March to October 4th for Google's announcement of new hardware initiatives is on, and in preparation for what we expect will at least be part of the announcement involving virtual reality, Google has brought the Google VR SDK out of beta, basically opening the floodgates for developers to begin coding their own apps to tap into the new Daydream platform, which is the VR platform built into Android. We expect to hear a lot about this platform at the event. And this just kind of signals that, we're going to hear about this at the event, basically. Developers can use Unity and Unreal Engines to help to create compatible games. That's thanks to a partnership with Google. The SDK basically just, you know, takes a lot of the heavy lifting out. It simplifies the code, which is what a good SDK does. It has support for asynchronous reprojection for things like helping to improve the perception of latency. It also has support for high-fidelity spatial audio, which we've heard about in the past, support for interactions with Daydream Controller. Daydream Spec has a little hand controller that you would hold on to that helps you kind of expand, you know, from just the cardboard viewer where you've got your hands on the viewer. Instead, you actually have a controller in your hand to kind of help you with control. So good for developers to kind of get started. This is another kind of path for developers to take if they want to help differentiate themselves from the crowd, because the, you know, Play Store and just app stores in general are so inundated with all types of apps. It's really hard to stand out. So if developers can get in there early, make Daydream Spec, you know, spec apps that work with the spec perfectly, they stand a really good chance, at least out of the gate, to kind of stand out and make some money, basically.
Do you think independent developers have a chance? Because I know they said that, like, a lot, a lot of big companies will be there at launch, like Netflix and IMAX and MLB and CNN will all have Daydream apps. But I wonder if there'll be independent apps at launch as well.
At launch, I'd be surprised if there weren't at least a couple of independents at launch. Google tends to like to do that and not just stick to the big ones, you know, and kind of show you a little bit of a spectrum as far as that's concerned. But I mean, in the near term, let's say over the course of the next year, independents stand to gain a lot, I think. Really, it's just make a great app that follows the spec well and that provides a great experience, and your pool of competition, you know, it's very easy to be seen in that small pool right now. So do it. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Chris from Levittown, Pennsylvania writes about our conversation about E911 on Watch OS 3 on the Apple Watch. He says this already exists by law. They're just not funding it properly. It is the E911 requirement codified into law many, many years ago before smartphones. The phone hardware is required to be able to report its geolocation to 911 when you call 911 automatically. You're not even legally allowed to sell a new phone that does not support it.
So the Apple Watch does have support for 911. You have to have your phone on you in order for that to work. So there is that kind of requirement. Either that or connected to Wi-Fi, which that's a nice alternative there too. But yes, very good to have that.
Coming up, Addie Robertson from The Verge is here to talk about a gadget that purports to turn anything into VR. But first, let's take a minute to thank Epson, the sponsor of this episode. Epson's revolutionary cartridge-free EcoTank line of printers for home and office introduce a new age in printing. The EcoTank ET4550 wireless all-in-one printer doesn't use ink cartridges. It features an amazing, innovative, refillable ink tank, earning it the title of CES 2016 Innovation Awards honoree. No more out-of-ink frustration. It includes up to 2 years of ink. That's equal to 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages. You can save up to 80% on ink with low-cost replacement bottles. And it's powered by Precision Core printing technology. It has auto two-sided printing and a 30-page auto document feeder, easy wireless printing from tablets and smartphones. All EcoTank printers deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience and value. With Epson's EcoTank line of printers, you'll have the freedom to print without running out of ink. The Epson EcoTank system was named the 2016 Small Biz Windows Printer of the Year. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank today to transform the way your home, office, or work group prints. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the Epson EcoTank printers. That's EPSON.com/EcoTank. And we thank Epson for their support.
All right, a new VR headset-ish thing called Elsewhere plans to take your iPhone and turn it into a 3D camera rig, sort of. Joining us to talk about this is Addie Robertson from The Verge. How's it going, Addie?
Hi, good.
It's good to have you here. So the marketing says this is a breakthrough in perception, possibly not overspeaking at all, for VR. Do you agree?
No, I do not agree.
So tell me a little bit about how this works. What is happening behind the scenes with Elsewhere?
Okay, so basically Elsewhere is two things. One of them is Google Cardboard. It's a pair of lenses and a frame, and you put an iPhone in it. The other part is an app, and basically what it does is convert any video to 3D video. So if you look at like a picture on your phone, it'll convert that. The thing that's kind of neat about it is that it can convert your camera feed. So if you look at another screen through your phone's camera feed, you will see that screen in 3D, which is kind of neat. But it's not really VR, and it's not really quite as revolutionary as it's making itself out to be, because once you actually get over the novelty, it's not really clear what you do with it. So it's a super fun toy. But it's not really like a VR headset that you would want to spend a lot of time in.
Like, I'm trying to understand the effect, because I know you had said that you can use your camera to kind of like see the real world, let's say. How is it any more 3D than what we already see as 3D when we use our eyes? Or like, what's the difference?
Just really bad at telling what 3D is, and I don't know, understanding dimensions. But no, if you look at something that looks like it should have perspective and depth, like if you look at a TV or a laptop screen, then that's going to have what seems like looking at a 3D TV. Mm-hmm. But if you're just looking at the real world, like if you're looking at a thing that's already physically three-dimensional, I can't really tell the difference.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be sort of weird and trippy and intense, but I just haven't gotten it.
Well, it seems to me like it's something you might find in a cereal box, except for if that cereal costs $50, because that's how much it costs.
Right. And the thing that's really kind of annoying is that there's not really any reason that you should need the hardware if you have a Google Cardboard headset, which do come in the equivalent of cereal boxes, if you mean the
much.
New York Times.
Yeah.
And so really, it's just an app, and it's sort of a $50 iPhone app. And you can't download it from the App Store or buy it separately. You get a QR code when you order the glasses, and you scan it, it installs it.
Yeah, it kind of seems like they're banking on the fact that it sounds more intriguing than it actually probably ends up being. So I don't know, like when I kind of think of what's going on, like I really want to check it out with my own eyes, because then I can understand kind of the visual sense of this, because it is really difficult to explain to someone who's never seen this sort of thing what it actually looks like. Is it safe to kind of make the comparison to, like, I know in the audio world there's spatial enhancements that, you know, like simulate surround sound or that sort of thing, which, I mean, to an audio purist, I would say they would listen to that and be like, oh, yeah, I guess so. But yeah, not really at all. Is it kind of along those lines? Like it's simulating it, but it's not very convincing.
I could see that. Maybe a closer comparison would be when you had DVD players that could sort of turn any DVD into vaguely stereoscopic 3D.
Oh, okay.
By sort of converting it. And so it wasn't necessarily perfect, but it was a decent simulacrum. And in this case, it's that it's attached to your face, right, and it's in a format that's very sort of hyped and popular right now.
So is that the, I mean, that's a little bit of what your article in The Verge is about. Like, you know, you throw the word VR into anything, even if it's just, you know, 3D video or some, you know, version of 3D video, and then you think you can charge $50 for it. Like, talk a little bit about just the hype around VR right now.
Right. So if you talk about VR, it's sort of like saying that it's magic. I mean, they do actually also use the word magic, I think, somewhere. But it sort of puts it outside the realm of just being a gadget. And at that point, it's something that's transcendent and something that also people will kind of group in with the very best of VR. So if you say virtual reality, people sort of think, oh, it's Google Cardboard, but Google Cardboard's probably like the Oculus Rift. It's all virtual reality, which is not true at all.
Right. Yeah, the difference between VR and immersive video and all of these different stages, and it's all getting lumped into the same bucket. And, you know, no wonder people who have never seen it, you know, this sort of stuff are confused about it. Mm-hmm. Because it's a million different things.
It was a million different things. Like, there's a reason that web language is virtual reality markup language, is VRML. Because at one point, 3D graphics were VR. It's just that that's not remotely what anyone means right now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Could you see a future where, because it sounds like it's definitely doing something unique to itself that you don't really find in other solutions. Could you see this as being like another spec on existing VR headsets? Like, they integrate whatever is going on here as like another special feature, and that would add value to something that already exists, maybe?
Theoretically, anybody, I guess, could integrate the software, although I don't know all that much about it. Samsung, yeah. So the Gear VR has the pass-through camera. I could see adding that to that so that you could look at a screen and see 3D through the screen. The problem is that when you say that, it just sounds so convoluted.
Yeah, it really does. It really does.
So we were just talking about Daydream VR. Is that something that excites you?
Yes, I'm actually really excited about Daydream.
What exactly are you looking forward to most? Is it the, well, I don't know. I think what I'm very curious to see is how Android kind of, how Google takes VR, which we've had a year, I'd say, of extreme hype around VR, and like somehow sandwiches this into an OS environment, you know, into the phone, and does something. I think they expect for it to do something a little bit different than what we've seen. What are you most looking forward to?
I mean, there's a lot we don't know about Daydream still, but the overall thing that Google keeps talking about is just that they want to take that process of, okay, I'm going to get my VR headset, I'm going to put it on, I'm going to put my phone in, and they want to make that really easy. And just the idea that someone is making that their primary goal and making a headset that's really, that feels really good, and basically just taking out all the rough edges of VR, there's already a lot of pretty good mobile content. If they could bring that over, but just make the process of actually using the headset not so onerous, mm-hmm. I think that's really great.
Yeah.
Well, of course, you cover VR, but a lot of what you cover is just like sci-fi-ish stuff. And you had another great piece today about something called Scrip that sort of takes this idea of the cashless future, and some of the issues that we have with it is like, oh, well, you know, I just pay with my phone, I pay with my watch, I have no idea. It's not the same as like handing over, you know, four quarters for a dollar, you know, two $20 bills. Talk a little bit about Script.
Okay, so Script is a design concept from a studio called New Deal Design, and it's, besides the fact that their lead designer has designed all kinds of actual real products like the Fitbit, they also do concepts like Underskin, which was a theoretical implantable device that would let you do things with your hands and put these really cool sort of spiderweb displays in it. So they do a combination of like real products and then these kind of crazy futuristic things. And Scrip is a metal disc that you can transfer money with, but you have to actually slide your finger along it, and it has haptic feedback. And it will make you sort of count out every bill that you're supposed to be spending.
So just the bills, not the pennies. It won't make you count out pennies.
I asked about this, and they said it rounds it off.
Okay.
Phew.
So it's not, is it? It's not available yet.
It's not, and this isn't something that they're actually, as far as I know, going to build. It's something that it would be kind of weird, honestly, that it's supposed to make you more conscious of spending money and understand the value of it better and spend it more carefully. But it's also something that would probably be pretty expensive. So you're asking somebody to buy a really expensive money-saving device.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Like it looks like, yeah, I'm not going to spend my money on that. And it's, then, yeah.
It's an upfront investment.
Right.
You know, that's all it is.
But I do like, I mean, I hate using cash, but then there is this, you know, the cashless society is very like dystopian in ways that we probably haven't even imagined.
Yeah. Well, they're talking about this as being kind of a bunch of psychological tricks, and it seems like things you could probably put in a phone or a smartwatch. There's no reason they couldn't have sort of interesting haptic effects that they don't now.
Mm-hmm. That's true. When I send lasers with the new iMessage on iOS 10, I can feel the lasers. So, yeah, maybe they need to get on that.
Same thing. Addy Robertson from The Verge, thank you so much for joining us today and talking all about this. Where can people follow your work online?
I am at theverge.com. That's V as in Victor. And I am at twitter.com/thedexterarchy, which you can look down here for.
Excellent. Thank you again, Addy. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good night. TNT's fan of the day is Donald Boat. I don't know how I said that. One of those was probably right. Who sent us this photo. He also wrote in to say that he has over 230 CDs, more than 500 DVDs. That's a good collection. And 2,100 songs and 60 movies purchased on iTunes. He says, quote, "I believe in supporting the industry." Mm-hmm. "And I believe you can fly." Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we're going to find it. Coming up, get ready for a Lego drone. This is actually really cool. But before we get there, let's take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode. That's ZipRecruiter. If you're hiring or, you know, you're looking for the right candidate, you need to know where to post your job to find the best candidates. There are so many places to do this, so it's hard to keep track. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all of the top job sites. That can be a challenge. With ZipRecruiter, you can do that easily. Posting jobs in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to more than 100 job boards, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. You just post one time, then you'll watch all those candidates roll into the ZipRecruiter easy-to-use interface. ZipRecruiter offers optimized pages that look great on any screen. You can actually add their unique mobile apply process for even more visitors and more applicants. You can find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. They're all over the map, so you might as well find them. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can add multiple users to your account to help you manage it. You'll quickly screen candidates with real-world questions using free-form, multiple-choice, or yes-no formats, and then view those candidate responses in conjunction with their formatted resumes. You can rate them, hire the right person fast, all the tools that you need to find the right people. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. More than 125 million candidate applications have been delivered. So you can get started right now. You can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. That's ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today.
Earlier this week, we balked at the $800 price tag of the new foldable drone from GoPro.
Is that balking?
That's balking.
Yeah, I think that is.
It's the best balk I've ever seen.
I balk in the club sometimes. Anyways. Sorry.
Okay, so we're balking at $800. Would you balk at $150? Is that more in your price range?
Definitely. That's more in my price range. Yeah.
The FlyBricks is a new drone-making kit that uses Lego bricks to create a flying quadcopter that requires no soldering. You need to wire the circuit board and program the LEDs, but it comes with instructions. If this sounds like something you might want to buy for someone this holiday season, you might need to act fast. The FlyBricks folks say there's limited availability, and you can pay a little less if you buy it right now. I bought the deluxe kit, which will eventually be $250, but was $190 right now. It edged a little bit over $200 with taxes and shipping. The basic kit is only $150. It doesn't come with a controller, which should be okay because you can control it with your smartphone or a tablet. So I am excited about this.
That is cool. Yes, I am excited too. Although I'm not excited about the... Because I know anytime... Okay, I don't have a whole lot of practice flying drones. But when I do, I tend to, I don't know, crash them. They tend to run into things, that sort of stuff. It's probably why I don't fly many drones, because I'm afraid of what might happen. I'd be even more afraid what might happen with this, because, I mean, it's kind of made out of Lego bricks. So I have to imagine it doesn't take much and these things are just going to fall apart entirely and you're going to have to start from scratch again.
I don't think it doesn't look like you have to start from scratch. You just, that's the fun. You put it back together.
But as long as it stays together long enough for me to get like, you know, to like drain the battery and flying it around before it wrecks and I have to, I don't know, I could just see it like running into a wall and all the little tiny little Lego pieces going everywhere and then I had to build it up again. And I only got like 3 seconds of airtime because I'm really bad at flying them.
That's part of the fun.
Oh. That's why you get this.
I talked to Padre, Father Robert, about this. He was like, but he likes to solder.
Yeah, exactly. He's like pro. He's pro level. This is kids play.
Yeah, right. That's why it's not $800. That's why we're not balking at the price tag.
No, I would not balk at the price tag on this. It's actually really cool because you learn... Well, you learn so many things through this, not only just, you know, kind of building things with the blocks and everything, but how a drone, you know, the essential components of a drone, the technology and electronic components behind it. Super fun learning tool. I have to imagine kids. I know if I was a kid, especially, I would have got lost in that.
Mm-hmm. So. And, you know, drones are easier to fly now.
Yeah, that's true.
You shouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
I actually can bring in my drone for you to fly around if you want. It, you know, it doesn't break. It bounces off. They've got new materials now these days. It's not your grandfather's drone we're talking about, Jason.
Wow, my grandfather flew so many drones back in his day. You have no idea. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us. That's tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can find us on Twitter. We're at TechNewsTodayTV.
You can find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me to tell me I've made a mistake by buying this Lego drone, please do. I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director, Kara. Thanks to Burke. Thanks to Kevin. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.